All right, members, we have a quorum, so we'll get going. First off, Representative Shumper, would you move the minutes from the February 13th meeting?
So moved, Mr. Chairman.
Any comments, questions? All in favor of them adopting the minutes, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. All opposed? Those minutes are adopted. And I... We do have a quorum, yes. Just got one. And we also have one bill referral to the Mental Health Division, House File 974, which is Representative Otremba's bill. I think we're going to start, before we get to bills, is Lori Kiefer in the... would you like to come down and offer your comment? This is kind of a follow-up on on Tuesday's session, where we had some testifiers on disability issues in general. And I think Ms. Kiefer has some testimony she'd like to offer as well. So please identify yourself for the record and let us know what's on your mind.
Good evening, members. My name is Lori Kiefer, and I'd just like to follow up on some things that happened that I saw from last meeting and tell you a little bit about how it happened to me.
And we have about 5 minutes or so if we could do that. Thank you.
It'll take about 4 minutes.
No, that's great. Thank you.
I'll ask these questions. Then it might take longer. Okay, in 2006, I had to pay out $3,200 in Medicare. And in 2007, they want $3,800. And out of my own pocket, for the pharmacy, my medications, I had to pay $300 last year. And what I'm trying to say here is that the copays and the doctors don't spend time, more than 2 to 3 minutes with their patients. They think that all this paperwork that's required by the state and by the federal government, I can't even get things for my own mental health, like the light box that my mental health providers gave me a prescription for. I went to order it, and the state said, no. And then they said, we found out that they wanted more information. They wanted to know if it was going to be effective, because if I had one before, and if it's effective, if I had one before, and I told my mental health provider that, hey, I never had one, so I don't know if it's going to work or not. I mean, it's that obvious. And with my own experience here, I have to live off the food shelf, because I'm lucky if I live with a nickel in my pocket at the end of the month. And I cannot get the necessary items I need. Like, to me, like food and toothpaste and socks or whatever, they're considered luxury items to me, because of the fact that there's no money for me to be had when by the time I get paid. I'm from my own example, and my question to you people is if the state's paying out money for our all, like the medications and healthcare stuff, why can't the federal government reimburse us, like Vermont and Mississippi and other states have that program? And I cannot afford $1,000 to $10,000 for a hospital stay or ER visit, and I found that to be under consideration from the House and from the Senate. Like I said, I can't even afford my mental health drugs or anything else. And I'm getting really worried, because I can't live like this anymore. I mean, my disabilities are all... I have a lot of illnesses that need to be closely watched. And because I cannot get it closely watched, because I can't afford the copays, and for me to go to the doctor with all my medical problems... I can't afford to pay the high copays to have a 2 or 3 minute doctor visit. And I think this is really unfair and really, just it's not fair for anybody with a disability or with even with insurance at all, or don't have insurance, but they do have insurance. So I'm asking you to come up with a bill that is able to be able so that I can afford food, so I don't have to go to the food shelf every 2 months to live on. I mean, I begged with everybody. I'm tired of begging. I can't beg no more because I can't get, I mean, it's humiliating to me. And it's very embarrassing to me to have to beg for every little thing. So if there's any questions or any more anything you want me more to ask or say or anything, would you just let me know?
Thank you. Any members, any questions? Well, thank you for coming down and sharing that. We appreciate that.
Thank you.
Thank you. I think, members, we're going to kind of move around the agenda a little bit and start with House File 725, just because Representative Medor is, I think she's the only one who's not a member of the committee, and then she can move on to the rest of her life here. So. So, Representative Medor, and I guess I will move House File 725, that it be recommended to pass and be referred to the Finance Committee. Representative Medor.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, members. Today, we're here today to talk about a bill that will provide funding for a statewide. You guys are my testing ground. I haven't presented a bill yet, so please bear with me as I get through this process here. And I shouldn't have admitted that in public, but I am. So please bear with me as I get through this. Basically, this will provide a statewide reporting, funding for a statewide report to find out exactly what our disability community needs with regards to assistive technology. I have some testifiers here today, and we will be able to take questions. Mr. Chair, would you like to wait till we get through with our testifiers, or are there questions now? Or
why don't we go to the testifiers first?
Okay. All right. Well, I'd like to introduce Ms. Carol Fury here, and she will be able to go ahead and speak to the terms of the bill.
Thank you. Representative Medor, my name is Carol Fury, and I'm the Director of Assistive Technology in Minnesota. Mr. Chair and members, thank you for taking the time to hear our bill today. Fortunately, I've been here once or twice before, so maybe I can help representatives to feel a little more comfortable up at the table. Our bill is really unique. This is historical for Minnesota in that we've never had a standalone assistive technology bill. And assistive technology is just a fancy word for adaptive equipment. What we're looking to do this year is to continue our work, particularly in greater Minnesota, by providing the opportunity to do a study through a mandate with the legislature to study what are the needs of people with disabilities, what kinds of equipment do they actually need, where are they finding equipment, how are they paying for it, and who's helping them get it. Because the system is really quite fragmented with agencies in the state, such as the Department of Health, Department of Employment and Economic Development, Department of Education, Department of Administration, and maybe some others that I'm not even aware of, as well as about a dozen state or nonprofit organizations in greater Minnesota and in the Twin Cities that are providing assistive technology services, most people don't really know where to find or get equipment. So the bill today asks for the state to undertake the task of studying the needs of people with disabilities in the area of AT, and also looking at the system. What are we doing in the system? Who's doing what? And how do we pull this together and create a plan that will take Minnesota from fragmented to coordinated services where people know who to call, where to call, and how to find the equipment that they need for everyday living? The appropriations that go with this bill that we're seeking funding for are, number one, for the study. We're requesting $200,000 to be appropriated to pay for the study, and the study would be presented to the legislature in 2009. The cost for that study is really minimal, considering that most studies are going to cost quite a bit more than that. that are being done on a statewide basis. We will, if necessary, facilitate that with some private dollars to ensure that that study is complete. That study will also be working with the Department of Revenue to establish a tax set-aside program for people with disabilities to set aside pre-tax dollars on earned income and other forms of income for the purposes of purchasing assistive technology. The second appropriation is a two-year appropriation, $300,000 each of the next 2 years from the general fund, and actually I think there's an amendment to this bill that would ask the funds to be passed to the Minnesota State Council on Disability, not the Commissioner of Human Services. Is that correct, Chairman Thiessen?
Yes, and if that's an author's amendment, why don't we just take that up right now? Just to put the bill in the shape the author wants it, I'd move the 039 amendment. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? The amendment's adopted.
Thank you, Chairman Thiessen. The $300,000 appropriation each of the next 2 years would support the Minnesota Region's AT Collaborative, which is a consortium of providers primarily in greater Minnesota who do the hands-on work with people every day in the area of access to assistive technology. This will primarily pay for staff time and travel. That's it. About $40,000 to each one of the regions for each of the next 2 years during the study. Again, we're relying on that study to give us some direction about how to pay for these resources that for the last 5 years have been paid for primarily with local foundation dollars. And the third appropriation is to help us with the remaining share necessary for a federal grant that we received a couple of years ago in Minnesota to provide low-interest loans. This federal grant is one-time appropriation. Minnesota received, actually, Assistive Technology of Minnesota through the Department of Administration, received a grant award for $1.2 million, requiring us to raise the local match of about $450,000. We're still in need of $200,000 of that local match in order to capture the entire grant award. If we do not have the $200,000 for local match by September 30th, of this year, $650,000 in federal dollars already here in Minnesota will go back. And with that, I would take your questions.
Representative Gobble.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Testifier, I'm just curious. I think this is good legislation, by the way. I think we do need this this kind of study, certainly, but I'm wondering if we've got kind of the cart before the horse with the $600,000. You mentioned that this is needed to kind of implement the results of the study. Shouldn't we first have the results before we fund $300,000 in two years?
Mr. Chair, Representative Vetter, the funding for the Minnesota Region's Assistive Technology Collaborative is for a group that has already been established and funded primarily through federal dollars over the last 10 years. This group has been in existence since probably 97. Officially as a consortium and a collaborative as from beginning in 2001. So this group is already in existence, has been funded either through federal dollars, state dollars, primarily through federal and money that's been raised through the collaborative from private donors and private foundations. Our point is that if there's no continuing funding for this group, they will probably go away. And rather than start over and recreate regional assistive technology networks, which would cost probably a lot more than $300,000. We'd like to fund them during the interim of the study, partially with state dollars.
Paula?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And testifier, so we're looking at this money as operating costs to keep that organization going.
To keep there's about 10 organizations. Yes, that's correct.
Okay, thank you.
Representative Lopper.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And to our guests, I hadn't heard of the Minnesota Region's Assistive Technology Collaborative before. And I wonder if you could just address how that relates to the Centers for Independent Living, which I think have, at least in my experience, more visibility. And also, you said that these are primarily in greater Minnesota. Can you address how you expect the metro needs to be met, and are there funding needs within the metro area that we should balance out as we consider this in the finance division?
Mr. Chair, Representative, that's actually true that the Centers for Independent Living have a higher level of visibility, if you will, most likely than the Minnesota Region's Assistive Technology Collaborative, because in some cases we are one, and that we partner with the Centers for Independent Living in three of the seven regions. The seven regions that are comprised of the Minnesota Region's Collaborative cover all 87 counties, including the metro. The seventh region is operated in sort of a consortium between Assistive Technology of Minnesota and a partnership with a couple of other organizations to cover the metro. In the greater Minnesota, we have six regional programs that cover all the other 80 counties. And in those six regions, there are four Centers for Independent Living that are part of that partnership. Region 2, which is the Northeast Center for Independent Living. Region 3, which is the Freedom Center. Region 6, which has both the Centers for Independent Living in Mankato, Smiles, and Stemsil, which is down in Rochester. So four of the eight existing Centers for Independent Living are our partner in the Minnesota Regions Collaborative, providing assistive technology services through the Assistive Technology Network. I know that sounds rather complicated, but that is how we do intertwine and work directly with the centers in greater Minnesota. And we would be looking at the appropriation of six of the seven agencies or regions that are in greater Minnesota would get, you know, their percentage of the funding, as well as the seventh in the Twin Cities. So it will be equally distributed.
Call up, Mrs. Buffett.
Mr. Chairman, so there's one agency serving the half of the population in the metro area, and what agency would that be?
There are probably two or three different agencies in the Twin Cities that are doing that, but in our collaborative, the agency that is primarily responsible is Assistive Technology of Minnesota. We do work in partnership with United Cerebral Palsy and their Matlin project. We work with Gillette and their mobile outreach clinics. We work with a variety of partners.
Representative Schumper.
Mr. Chair, Representative Mandora, could you explain a little bit about the microloans that are referred to in the last paragraph?
The microloan? I'll again let Ms. Curry answer that. Thank you.
Sure.
The Alternative Finance Project was a federally funded initiative where Minnesota applied for a grant specifically, a one-time grant specifically to establish a low-interest loan program for individuals with disabilities and their families and representatives to purchase adaptive equipment through low-interest loans. Currently, we're operating that program with half of the federal allocation appropriation because we've only raised half of the local match. That's what we're asking the state to provide, which is the other portion of that local match, $200,000 that's remaining. As of now, and to give you some information on how that program actually operates, over the last 20 months since we've actually been operating the program under the federal guidelines with the local match, we have provided $870,000 in low-interest loans to individuals and families for the purchase of equipment. Of that $870,000 in loans, we provided $200,000 of those loans that are guaranteed or collateralized against the funds held for the program. And so specifically, we're helping some of the people who are very needy establish their credit, find a way to pay for equipment. We just had a person that we helped get some equipment for vision related, and she needed about $4,000. She's an individual who lives on $623 a month, and we were able to provide her with a low-interest loan and make the payments work for her so that she could buy her equipment.
Hmm. Sounds good.
President Liebling, did you have a question?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I guess I had just really wanted to ask about those microloans, okay, too, and ask for some examples, and I think I just heard one. But if you had another one, I guess I'd like to hear just a little bit more of some of the kinds of things that the microloans might be funding.
Yes.
Thank you.
Sure.
Thank you, Representative Thiessen. Representative, we fund about anything, anything that could be considered assistive technology. Vehicles and vehicle lifts, of course, come to mind. They're one of the things that we see quite often. We see communication devices when insurance won't pay for it, or in some cases, and I really don't want to go there, but sometimes medical assistants will deny an individual the right to a communication device. And the family might come to us and say, we're not going to fight this battle. Can we take the loan out and help our daughter or son get the device they need? So we've funded, you know, pieces of equipment for babies to help them, you know, sit up in their beds. We've helped to provide kids with educational tools, seniors with adaptations in their homes. Stair lifts are kind of a common thing for some of the seniors. In addition, we also, if a loan is not appropriate, we do find other ways to help people pay for things. So the loan really is kind of a package of the services that we provide around the loan program.
Representative Medora.
Thank you, Chair Thiessen and Representative Leaving. I know several families that have participated in this program. Oftentimes, if they're not eligible for MA or they've not been able to apply through the TEFRA program to access MA, they end up doing this circle of trying to get a service, and in the meantime, their children are usually deteriorating. So oftentimes, they will go out to these agencies, and they will be able to obtain those loans. Oftentimes, we have issues with how quickly we can turn something around, and oftentimes, the credit card limit is just it exceeds that value. So having the ability to do this and funding this project here is very important for a lot of our middle-income families that are unable to participate through TEFRA for MA services.
What's the repayment rate? Is it pretty good?
Representative Thiessen and members, we established that based on the individual and the individual's need.
I mean, what's the, maybe that's not the right question.
What, oh, the interest rate?
No, how often do people make full payments on the loan?
Well, I shouldn't probably say this out loud. I need to knock on wood. Of all the loans, we've had zero default rate.
Okay. Default rate. Thank you. There's the word.
And I would like to offer one more thing.
Yes.
We've been able to provide people with a low interest. I mean, you're paying 3% below prime. We've saved in the last 2 months, just in 2 months, $65,000 in interest payments for our clients.
Mm-hmm. Representative Loeffler.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And to represent Medora, I mean, I think this is an area really that does need some study, and I really commend you for bringing it forward. And I think there's issues that are different versus for someone younger who's looking at a long-term need, as opposed to, I think many of us have probably experienced things with older relatives who may have short-term needs. And one of the areas that I've been concerned about is the difficulty for people to recycle and find other people who could use and benefit from equipment that is appropriate to transfer to someone else, whether it's the electric hospital bed or a specialized lift that, you know, you wouldn't take the mattress, but you might take the electronics or some other sorts of issues. And I hope that part of the study will be looking at reuse and ways that people can do that, because I cringe every time when I drive through an alley or something and I see a walker or something that I know someone else would desperately love to have just out there because the family's cleaning out and doesn't know what to do with it.
Representative Thiessen?
Yes.
May I address?
Sure. Yes.
I'll just make a quick comment. Reuse and recycling is a very important component of what is happening right now in the state of Minnesota. Actually, the Minnesota STAR program, which is in the Department of Administration, one of their initiatives that they do use the remaining small amount of federal money that we get in Minnesota to pay for AT on the subject of reuse and recycling. They actually have a website for help people resell their equipment and give away equipment, and there's also a couple of other places within Minnesota, but we need to coordinate that. So that's another example of the need for the study. Thank you.
Representative Finstead.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Medora, is DHS doing anything like this? And then the second question is, when you were putting this bill together, why the Council on Disability versus DHS? Just a little background on that, I'd appreciate
well,
it.
Representative Medora.
Thank you, Chair Thiessen. I would guess I'd like to have, since Ms. Ferry here has been involved in the preparation of this bill over several years, I'd like to have her address that.
Sure.
Representative Thiessen, Representative Finstead, over the past 5 years or so, we've been involved in taking a look at what are the needs in greater Minnesota. When I say we, I'm talking about providers, state agencies. And because there are so many different groups that are involved at some level or another, we tried to find an agency that wasn't providing assistive technology services or supports and utilize that agency as the neutral party to facilitate the study. That would be the Minnesota Council on Disability. And in statute, the council is required to do initiatives such as research. So that was the reason that we went to the State Council on Disability as a neutral party, as one that can facilitate the research based on their statute requirements and one that has the capacity to do so, and that they just finished completing the Options 2 study that was mandated for the legislature.
I think there's just some other testifiers here that wanted to testify on the legislation. Mr. Shattuck, if you want to make your way down, and Mr. Wilkie, and Ms. Truman, why don't we all, if you all want to kind of make your way down to the table.
Chair,
Yes.
Are there any more questions for?
I don't. Representative Rood.
Just a quick question. I'm curious. Are hearing aids one of the items that might be people might take out a loan for?
Representative Houston and Representative Rood, absolutely.
In our last committee, we heard about the incredible markup for hearing aids. So I just
We try to help people with, make it real brief. The Starkey Foundation has a program, and many times we help people get the $500 that they need to enter into the program, and then they're eligible for free or reduced hearing aids. But we have fully funded $8,000 hearing aids through a loan.
Yeah, thank you.
Thank you.
Mr. Shannon. And we have several other bills to get through, so if we could keep the testimony relatively brief. Thank you. Welcome to the committee. Glad to see you here.
Mutual. Thank you for having me. And I'm going to talk.
And please identify yourself for the record, if you could.
I'm sorry. I'm Clarence Shattuck, and I am a computer user, basically, assistive technology user. And that's what I'm going to speak on. I may not take up my whole 5 minutes, so somebody else can use it. But I just want to really emphasize the need for funding for programs either, you know, through state services for the blind or any program that vendors with the state agency that will provide training and support services and assistive technologies as the AT really helps us, those of us who are blind, you know, to be more competitive in the job market. One example of that is this little device I have here. It's called the Braille Note. It's, I have a QWERTY keyboard. And this model came out about 6 years ago, and I got it shortly after it came out, and it's already obsolete. But what it basically does is it's a note taker, and I can carry it with me wherever I go. I can do internet work on it, email. It's a daily planner. It's got a word processing capability, scientific calculator capability. The newer model has a GPS capacity, which this one doesn't, so I have to rely on myself to know where I'm at all times. So, it's a handy little tool, and it just has made the process of use of technology much more beneficial for those of us, like say, who are blind. Another program I use, you know, is the Job Access with Speech, or more commonly known as JAWS, which allows me to access a variety of web links, various programs on the whether on the internet or through the use of the computer. And these are rather expensive programs, so you know, it helps with our access to, through the agencies. To be provided the financial support to acquire these type of devices. And the third one I use, which is also a very common one, is the Kurzweil 1000, which I can scan readable materials into the Kurzweil, which then is converted into a language that the computer can read, and so it's read back to me, basically, so that any print materials, pages, newspapers, whatever, that I scan in can be read, and I can save files either on the Kurzweil or into my PC. And those are just some of the examples of the assistive technologies that are out there. And, you know, the kind of opportunities it provides for us, you know, whether we work in assistive technology or in school districts or writing profession, whatever it is, you know, these are really handy pieces of equipment that help make that much easier. So with that, I'll stop. If there are any questions.
Thank you, Mr. Shattuck. I don't. There are none right now.
Thank you.
But that's incredible that technology can do that, though. Thank you for coming down.
Thank you,
Mr. Wilkie.
Hello, my name is Dave Wilkie. I'm from St. Paul. I'm a parent of a young man with cerebral palsy who uses assistive technology to walk and also to do his job. He actually works at MCIL. I'm also the manager of Gillette's Mobile Outreach Program, which is an assistive technology mobile clinic. I've been the manager of that for 22 years. At the moment, we go to 20 sites throughout the state of Minnesota. As a matter of fact, yesterday I was in Crookston trying to set up another clinic up there, and it was 17 below. And then we went on to run a clinic in Bemidji today, and we were seeing approximately 30 patients up there with a variety of disabilities. Without us going up there, those people would not be able to get services, probably. Either that or they'd have to travel all the way back down to the Twin Cities for services, which causes a real hardship for families because they burn up all their vacation time, it costs them a lot of money, and it breaks up the family. So I'm supporting this bill because the needs out there are really great. The services are really limited, and they're fragmented. There's pockets of expertise all over the state, but we haven't been able to kind of put it all together. That's why we need the study. Trial of equipment is a problem. We don't have the ability right now to have enough equipment for people to try to use to see if it's going to work for them so that they can go out and get funding for it. A lot of times what ends up happening is they don't get a trial, they get a piece of equipment, doesn't work for them, it sits in a closet. Funding to bring services to these locations around the state, the 20 sites that we go to, is really precarious. We get funding from United Ways. We get funding from foundations. There isn't a consistent stream of money that we can count on, so we don't know from year to year whether we can continue to go. As a matter of fact, this past year, our funding in Austin dried up, and we had to shut the clinic down. So now there's virtually no augmentative alternative communication services in southeastern Minnesota. And we also provide braces and protective headgear and all kinds of things for people that have seizure disorders and cerebral palsy.
Thank you. Any questions, members? Okay, thank you very much for your work and for coming down. Ms. Truman.
Hi, my name is Kathy Truman, and I'm from Cold Spring, Minnesota, sort of rural Stearns County. I serve as the Assistive Technology Chair for Region 4, which is in the St. Cloud area in north, 14 counties, and I've been doing this since 1998, in addition to my regular work in rehabilitation. I've worked in rehab for over 40 years, and so I've seen the impact now that the advances in assistive technology have had on the people that I've really dedicated my life to working with, and it's made some huge differences. By bringing this collaborative together of the people who have my equivalent positions in the other part of the state, we're able to share resources. Like Carol said, we do the funding sources we've applied for and received some regional, some state, some foundation money, but we need to have something, you know, to keep us going. And we all serve people with assistive technology needs every day, but the needs are great out there, and we need to know how to. Much of what we do is networking. Much of what I do is information and referral. We've also had excellent success with mentoring professionals in outstate Minnesota to bring them up to speed. It doesn't work to have workshops for a speech and language pathologist if there's only one out there. So we'll send someone with expertise out and try to pay their expenses, help mentor a person, see some patients together. We do assistive technology screenings for people with disabilities, trying to work with employers sometimes then too, and various advocacy things, advocacy activities. We have lending libraries, small ones, but we do have libraries that we can lend out equipment to so people are able to try it. We in the St. Cloud area, we've also had a computers go round program where people donate computers and we get them, we refurbish them and get them out to people with disabilities, and that's been very successful. In the Arrowhead region, they've done that by buying computers, good but lower end computers, and having people make small payments on them, and those small payments then buying more computers. So we have different models that we use to do this, and it's very effective when we can come together. and do this. So and also we've paid for some training to get professionals up to speed in some areas. It's really important for them to have this assistive technology practitioner status. That has to, that more and more people will have to have that in order to do the justifications and get the funding, and that's been one of our emphasis too. So it really is very effective when we come together monthly to share resources. The reutilization thing, one of my regional network members is in charge of the equipment loan program for Goodwill Easterseal in St. Cloud, and we worked very closely together to recycle. Some of you addressed that, you know, walkers in garbage cans, not a good idea. And we've worked closely. We've worked closely with those people. So it is something for us to have some funding to, you know, do more in this region, to build on the resources and the things we've done while the study is being done. It's not that we're waiting for the study to be done, but waiting for the study to show us more effective ways of networking to meet these needs. And I speak of this personally and professionally. My husband has a spinal cord injury more than 40 years. Assistive technology allows him to be independent. He has his own van. He has a power wheelchair. He also has a manual one. He's very independent and with the computer technology. So I speak personally and professionally on this matter. It's a huge impact, and we want people to be able to afford the technology, and there's also just even the piece of knowing that it's out there. As I was, even though very low-end things in home care, I was able to recommend something as basic as a raised toilet seat, and that particular client thought I was a goddess. Really impacted her life. So,
well,
anyway, do you have
any
questions?
Very much. Any questions, members? Well, thank you for coming down.
You're welcome. Thank you for coming down.
Any other questions on the bill, members? And if not, I would renew my motion that House File 725, as amended, be recommended pass and be re-referred to the Finance Committee. All in favor of the motion, say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? The motion prevails, and the bill will move on. Thank you, Representative Madure.
Thank you very
much,
Mr. Chair and members.
Representative Walker.
Oh, yeah.
Welcome to the committee, Representative Thiessen.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I would move that House File 708 be recommended to pass and re-referred to the Finance Committee.
So move.
Members, well, and I'd also like to make an author's amendment, if I could, which is to delete Section 1 of the bill. And I think, members, this is something that we need to get. The issue in Section 1 has to do with the donut hole in Medicare and trying to find a way to pay for it. Not comfortable that this is exactly the way right now. So we're going to revisit that and hopefully come back with some other legislation at a later date. So if we could, I'd move that amendment.
Yes, we do have to vote. Members, in favor of moving the amendment, I'll say aye.
Aye.
And opposed? Okay, so moved.
Okay, thank you. Members, House File 708 really does a couple of things, and I'll just briefly touch on them and then let Mr. Euland kind of describe it in more detail. But a lot of the idea here is to allow people with disabilities and others, I guess, but access to dual eligible folks, so people that qualify for both Medicare and Medicaid. This Section 3 allows them to get some of the prescription drugs they need at a more affordable rate. It brings down the copay to what we've done for everybody else, which is $12 a month. We kind of missed that category when we made that change last year and does some other things. It expands the Ombudsman program for managed care, and the last thing it does is it pushes out the date that our MINDO program will basically go into effect. So, Mr. Yulin, if that's okay, that he testifies.
Yes, welcome to the committee, Mr. Yulin. Please state your name for the tape and proceed.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. My name is Cole Yulin. I'm from the National Multiple Sclerosis Society, Minnesota chapter. I'm also the co-chair of the Minnesota Consortium for Citizens with Disabilities. What I'm going to do is just kind of quickly walk through the major components of the bill and then just kind of highlight kind of what our thought process was as we were trying to get this developed. Section 2 deals with the annual reporting requirement for the Ombudsman for Managed Care. I think part of the thought process behind this section is that while there's plenty of anecdotes that are out there about what's going on and what's not going on for people with disabilities and others who are in managed care situations, especially in the public programs, but I think what we are hoping for is that if we can have an ombudsman that would be a reporting requirement that would look at this so we kind of can have a better handle of what really is going on out there rather than trying to deal with the anecdotes and try to get an understanding from that perspective. So that's why we're hoping to be able to catalog on an annual basis the positive and negative experiences that will help us to better target some of our areas of attention and quality improvement that we may need for services for people with disabilities. Section 3 deals with the copay issue. Actually, the way that this works is that there was the $12 cap, and that's it was originally a $20 cap that was imposed in the 2003 legislative session. In 2005, it was reduced to $12. But once Medicare Part D took effect, that the Medicare Part D superseded the state law in this respect, and that there was. And with Medicare Part D, they do not have a cap on how much people would pay out-of-pocket in co-pays for this group of people. And so what we are moving to do is to ask that the cap be put back in and that there be state dollars that would be providing assistance for people. I do know that there is another bill that Representative Huntley also has that also is addressing the same topic area as well. Section 4, what we are proposing is to delay the MINDO, stands for Minnesota Disability Health Options, this is a program that's been around for about 6 to 7 years for people with disabilities. It's primarily right now only available in the metro area. What we're proposing is to see that this be something expanded into other parts of Minnesota as well, but at this point, what we are seeking to do is to delay it by one year, and this is something that we've worked with the department. The department is in agreement on this as well. And part of the reason why we want to do this is that we want to be, as we expand this type of a program of providing managed care for people with disabilities in the Medicaid population, I think we want to make sure that we're doing this in a thoughtful and methodical way, and we don't want to just suddenly have it out there and provide it for people with disabilities and not have there be a thoughtful process in how it's put together. There has been a managed care task force that has been meeting for the past 2 years that the Department of Human Services has been leading in looking at some of these processes, and I think that's part of where we're going is to kind of follow along with that. But I think from the disability community's perspective, one of the things that we really want to emphasize is the need that there be care coordination and access to care coordination, and that's one of the things that I think that from our perspective we've been trying to really advocate for as we move forward for this population, because the care coordination has been one of the reasons why the current Minnesota Disability Health Options Program has been successful. By having that person that's kind of acting as the health care coordinator. So that way, if a person is having a problem with their disability or something new is developing, a new symptom has developed, whatever the case may be, they can call into that health care coordinator, and they can kind of work that through as to where is it that person needs to go. Should they be just getting home care services being provided to them? If for example, for people with multiple sclerosis, Access Healthcare, who has been the prime health care coordinator for this, what they may do for people with multiple sclerosis is they'll go to the Multiple Sclerosis Achievement Center, for example, and go visit people and have a person, like a nurse practitioner, visit with them and identify what's going on and try to understand what's the next level of care that may or may not be needed. Access Healthcare works in partnership with UCARE Minnesota, and that's how this has been provided up to this point. And it's been a wonderful partnership in serving people with severe physical disabilities. And then the final section is Section 5, and that provides some additional funding for the Ombudsman's for managed care offices as well. So that way, as we see more of this coming in the future, there's enough staff to provide assistance for people with disabilities. And that's kind of the summary of the bill.
Thank you, Mr. Ewing. And do we have any questions for the testifier? Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. The Section 5, the $300,000 appropriated for the Ombudsman, what is the salary going to be of the Ombudsman as far as his personal salary that will be paid to him?
Representative Deason?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I don't know the answer to that. I think it's probably more than one Ombudsman. I don't know if the department is here to talk about that, how many they have at this present time, but I don't have that. And I don't know what the salary is, whatever we calculate the FTE is. I think this is more than one position, though.
Thank you.
Any other questions, members? Representative Liebling.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I really had the same question, kind of where that number came from. How many people are you thinking that you would be assisting, and, you know, how many people would be hired to do this?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, I guess I don't have that answer right off the top of my head, but I think one of the things that, as we were going through the Managed Care Task Force and some of the meetings, especially a few months ago, I think one of the things that we kind of recognize is that there just isn't enough staffing available right now to be able to handle some of the questions, and especially as we probably are more looking forward and seeing that there's going to be more people with disabilities possibly going on to managed care or managed care type product, that there would be a need for more staffing to be able to handle some of the questions that people with disabilities would have. I think it's also a recognition that a lot of the questions that would come in or issues that would come in are going to be of a complex nature, and that's something that's going to be easily resolved. And so that's part of the reason why we want to ensure there's enough staffing for that.
Thank you. Members? Any other questions for this testifier? If not, we have two other testifiers. Representative Thiessen. We have Don Bordson. Mr. Bordson, please come down. Welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record and proceed.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My name is Don Bordson. I'm a parent of six children, one of whom is Dave, who is 30 years of age and has severe mental and physical disabilities. He lives in a medical assistance waiver-funded foster home in Ramsey County. My request to the legislators is to eliminate prescription co-pays for individuals that are dual eligible for medical assistance in Medicare. Dave did not have co-pays when medical assistance covered his prescriptions, but since he has transferred to Medicare, he does have co-pays. His prescription co-pays vary from $20 to $25 a month, as can be seen on the sheet I attached to one of the...
We'll distribute that to members.
This may not seem like a lot of money, but since Dave only receives $114 a month from his Social Security, as an expensive dresser and eater, he exceeds this amount almost every month. We pay for the amount that exceeds $114 for his personal expenses. Dave is an expensive dresser not due to his fashion taste, but due to his disabilities. He has cerebral palsy in his legs that cause him to wear out his clothes more rapidly than a normal person. Dave drags his right foot as he walks, which wears out his shoes, a shoe, in less than a month, even though they have more protection up the side than most shoes. He also crawls most of the time when he's in his home, which causes him to wear out the knees in about two pairs of jeans and one pair of pajamas each month. His mental disability causes him to chew holes in shirts and undershirts for stimulation that results in us replacing a couple of them each week. Dave also works as a volunteer at the Maplewood Community Center and has meals out in the community a few times a week. So that eats some more of his and our personal meal. So thank you for considering my request. And have any.
Thank you for testifying. And any members, any questions? If not, thank you very much. I appreciate it. And we'll bring down...
I don't think the other witnesses.
Okay.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, Chris Cunningham was going to be our next testifier. I think as we were having our testimony the other day about the issues that people with disabilities face, this may be a prime example of Metro Mobility. It did not quite come through on time here today. But I did want you to just know that I just have a few comments from him. Is that he is a person who is also on Access Healthcare. He has a cerebral palsy. He... I think one of the things that he'd like is specifically on Section 4 is relating to what the Minnesota Disability Health Options has done for him and the fact that this program is available to him 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. It's made it a lot easier for him, both for his financial work, his medical needs, his housing supports. He's got somebody who's able to help him with that. And he just kind of feels that this is something that a health plan alone would have never been able to provide for him. And so that was part of the importance of the care coordination from that perspective. And so he just kind of wanted to emphasize that without Access Healthcare and the work that they've been able to do, this would not work for him as efficiently. So in a nutshell, that was probably what he was going to be testifying to.
Thank you, Mr. Yulin. Representative Thiessen. Okay. Thank you very much. Members? We would like to vote on this to move it to the Finance Committee. All those in favor of moving the bill, say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Yeah. Thank you.
Representative Norton.
Chair Thiessen.
Representative Norton, do you want to move your bill?
I would like to move passage of House File 785 with the author's amendment, which is being passed around so that it's in the form that the author would like, and I'd like to move it for approval and for re-referral to the Committee on Finance.
Okay, so moved. Well, we'll first move the bill, 785, so that's before us. And why don't you go ahead and explain the bill, and you can explain it with the amendment. I don't think we have that yet, so we'll move that when everybody gets it.
All right. The issues of parental fees and waivers have come up repeatedly during the campaigns in the last several years, and for good reason. During the 2003 budget crisis and No New Tax Pledge era, the state was in a position to make significant reductions in spending across many areas of state government. Many of these cuts impacted the lives of our most vulnerable populations, including children and persons with disabilities and their families. This bill, House File 785, as amended, addresses just one area impacted by the changes in 2003. While some modifications were offered in 2005, the medical assistance TEFRA qualified families of children who are permanently disabled and require significant levels of care are still facing financial hardships through parental fees. House File 785 seeks to give parents taking care of their children at home a $100 credit per month off their fee, thus providing up to $1,200 of relief per year for each of the 3,839 families affected. There is also a component of the bill that clarifies that parents who use the parental fee can use it as a medical expense deduction. Some industries allow this and others do not. This bill will help families be able to fulfill state policy which seeks to support families to maintain their children with disabilities at home to the maximum extent possible. And Chair Thiessen, I have with me Steve Larson, from the director from ARC Minnesota, here to help answer any questions, and I would urge support of this bill.
And before we go on to that, let's move the amendment. Can I just ask, on line 1.7 of the amendment, should we take out the word parental before contribution? Do we want to call it a parental contribution instead of a parental fee? Is that the gist of that amendment? I don't know who. Okay. Okay. So on the amendment then, members, on line 1.7, I think we should, after insert, we should cross out the word parental. Then fee will just, contribution will replace fee. I think that's right. Is that right? Okay. So all in favor of Amendment A2 to get the bill in the order the author wants it, say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? The amendment is adopted. Go ahead, Mr. Wilson.
Mr. Chair, committee members, I think Representative Norton summarized the bill very well. Back in 2003 and 2004, the ARC of Minnesota conducted its Fair Fees for the Family campaign, in which we were able to make modifications in the fees for families during the 2005 session, and we're greatly appreciative of that. However, this fee continues to be a burden for families, and this is a modest request to continue to reduce those fees so families in Minnesota can continue to support their children with disabilities in their home and be able to continue to support them financially. So we urge your support, and I'm certainly open to any questions that any members might have in regards to this issue.
Representative Liebling.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And this really goes more to the amendment that we just adopted, because I had looked at the bill before not knowing about the amendment and actually kind of liked it in the form that it was in, which was a more progressive system. Giving this, as I understood it, giving this $2,400 as a deduction, essentially. And I'm just wondering why the change. Is it just because it was too expensive the other way, or what's your thinking there?
Mr. Chair, Representative Liebling, yes. As we looked at it and looked at the finances on this and competing interests with other bills that we're also supporting during this session on behalf of persons with disabilities, we wanted to go in with a bill that we thought would be successful during this session.
Representative Loeffler, first, thanks.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. My concern was actually to that same point, because I really do believe in sliding fee scales and to give an equal benefit of $100 a month to everyone in the program, to me, negates that component of it, and I hope that we can revisit this as it continues on in the Finance Committee, because I do think that's a value I'd like to see the program continue to echo. And I understand your and respect your efforts to deal with the, you know, mediating the fiscal cost of this, but I think there's some other ways we can work on that.
I think that's an interesting point. I got to think this through, but $100 off whatever your contribution is may actually be more progressive in a sense. I'm not sure that because it's $100 is worth a lot more to some people than others, perhaps. So I'm not sure which way that cuts, but that's for another day, I guess. Representative Gottwald.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I want to speak in favor of this, at least from a policy perspective. My concerns would be more along the financial lines, and that's dealt with in another committee. So, but we heard testimony from ARC members, people with disabilities in my district, who shared concerns about this. And I believe, Representative Loeffler, that the $100 would be more progressive. I think it would be. So I want to applaud what you're doing with the bill, and my concerns about dollars and cents will be brought up in the next committee. Thank you.
Sure.
Representative Norton.
Thank you. And I appreciate those comments, and I think you point, it is $100 for each family, but it is the sliding fee is still in place. So it's not taking out the chart that was provided, you know, to back this up. That's still in place. It's just reducing by $100 for everyone. So those that were paying less than $100 aren't going to pay anything. Those that were paying larger amounts are just going to get the $100 savings, if that's clear. And I also did want to point out, Chair Thiessen and members, that we did have some testimony. We don't have anyone here today because we felt there was sufficient testimony on this issue at our last gathering.
Yes, and I apologize, Representative Norton, that we missed the evening. It was because I think we missed the evening session last time. But the members who have been here in the past have heard this testimony as well. I did have a question on the first part of the amendment. What, this is a tax you can use? Is this a tax deduction that we're qualifying certain expenses for?
You're talking about on the amendment?
Right? Yes.
I think, Mr. Chair, committee members, I think there was a slight misstatement there. This is out of the pre-tax accounts that we're having problems with. Different HR administrators in different companies, despite the fact that we have an IRS letter supporting this as a legitimate expense in pre-tax accounts, is treated inconsistently. Mm-hmm. So we thought this would be an attempt to continue to clarify that.
Okay, I appreciate that. Thank you. Any other questions, members? All right. Then, all in favor, Representative Norton renews her motion that House File 785 be recommended to pass and be referred to the Finance Committee as amended.
I do indeed.
All in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? The motion is adopted and the bill will move on. Thank you, Representative Norton. Representative Loffler, House File 705.
Mr. Chairman, I would move that House File 705 be recommended to pass and be referred to the Committee on Finance.
Okay, Representative Loffler, yes, thank you to your bill. And I think, you know, this is largely a money bill, it appears. But I think we wanted to talk a little bit about the policy underlying some of these programs. Thank you. Go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. In our earlier hearing this week, we heard from a lot of families with children with disabilities and the value of publicly paid services in their lives in terms of opening doors to independence and greater accomplishment by their loved ones. Well, the door of opportunity to many people with disability has been largely locked tight for the last few years, primarily due to fiscal limitations. And how we have controlled costs and the three programs addressed by this program, which is the waiver program for people with developmental disabilities, the family support grant program, and the semi-independent living services, is to limit how many people can get those services. And so long waiting lists have been established. In your packet, you'll see a chart that gives you the current status of the waiting lists across the state of Minnesota, and on the reverse side is a county-by-county breakdown. And I think it really is a tragic situation that our budget has over 4,300 people with developmental disabilities waiting for the kinds of services that we heard about earlier this week. Almost 1,000 people under the Community Alternatives for Disabled Persons program, which is often referred to as CADI, and 80 people, or a little over 80 people, with traumatic brain injuries waiting for those kind of supportive services. The CAC program, the Community Alternative Care program, is a smaller program, but it has 6 people who require hospital level of care who are hoping to get out into community settings. This bill before you would only make a very small dent in that, and it will ultimately be up to the Finance Committee to decide how far down those waiting lists we can go. It suggests 200 additional openings in each of those. In the recent past, the only exceptions have been primarily for crisis situations. You might have recall hearing from the Lutheran bishop who testified about the situation with his son, who only came off of the waiting list because his father had a brain aneurysm and became disabled himself, and it was a crisis situation, and so his son was able to get one of those limited crisis slots. So this is a situation in which we unfortunately have a very steep cliff, and you either win the lottery and get one of these waivers and open up incredible opportunities and supports for independent and community-based living, or you sit for an unknown amount of time dependent upon family and other support services to put it together until that day comes for you. And so it is a policy choice that will be made in the Finance Committee about how far we can go in serving these people, but the chairman thought it was a good idea for us to all recognize here what the current situation is in serving these people and the programs we heard about earlier.
Did you want to testify any further on this?
Mr. Chair, committee members.
And yes. Please identify yourself again, I'm sorry.
Steve Larson, yes. With the ARC of Minnesota. And as Representative Loeffler pointed out, there's a current caseload on the developmental disabilities waiver. There is the term MRRC, but we thought through statute last year that would be eliminated, so I'm going to just refer to the developmental disabilities waiver. There's 14,170 people. At its peak, that waiver had approximately 15,000 people 4 years ago, and so we're down several hundred people on that waiver, with 4,300 approximately that are waiting for that waiver. The forecast calls for 300 new slots on January 1st, 2008, and 300 new waiver slots on January 1st, 2009. This bill calls for 200 additional slots, so a total of 800 over the biennium, and those 200 slots would start on July 1st, 2007. And so that's the main component of the bill, along with, on the bottom of the chart that Representative Loeffler referred to, is an additional 200 people being served on the Family Support Grant and Semi-Independent Living Service, which are modest as far as the cost go programs that are very effective in the Family Support Grant in helping families meet expenses that aren't met in any other way, and the Semi-Independent Living Services program, which helps adults with moderate disabilities live independently with just a few hours of support each month. And so we strongly urge you to support this bill also.
It's the DD waiver now, right?
Yep.
Should we make an amendment on that? Go ahead, Representative Loeffler.
Mr. Chairman and members, I had actually, when I'd gotten the bill draft, said, whoa, wait a minute, I thought I was proud to be an author on a bill that got rid of all this sort of archaic language. And we, apparently the Department of Human Services still uses references to that. We're checking about, there's some confusion about whether or not the feds prefer this language or not. And so I'm expecting to introduce another bill if that's necessary to address this or to make sure in the final bill when it comes out of finance it's appropriate. But we're still learning this current situation.
Thank you. Representative Gottwald.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Loeffler, I assume we're doing a fiscal note on this, right?
Mr. Chairman and Representative Gottwald, that's correct. And at this point, I mean, these are not inexpensive services, but it's also not inexpensive for people to be served in the alternative, which oftentimes is an institutional setting, which is much, much more expensive. But I'm anticipating just for the additional 200 slots in these three programs that we'll see a fiscal note of over $1.5 million.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair?
Yes. Mr. Larson?
I'd like to add to the statement that Representative Loeffler just made. The fiscal note for the waiver slots alone will probably be $10.2 million for this upcoming biennium.
Very correct.
Representative Anderson?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Loeffler, or your testifier, do you know where the governor is or his staff is in relationship to this? Because it talks about adding this to the base, and so I'm just curious if there's been any conversation with the governor's office.
Representative Loeffler.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Anderson, I have not personally, but I believe the witness has been discussing this with the administration.
Mr. Larson.
Mr. Chair, Representative Anderson. We have had some discussions with the administration, DHS staff, in regards to this. They're certainly not supporting additional expense over and above the governor's office, but they understand the need with the waiting list and our desire to move in this particular direction, and they have provided us the appropriate technical assistance as we've discussed this issue.
Resident Anderson, I think the governor's budget leaves it at the forecast amount. Is that correct?
Yes, 300 spots per year is in the forecast.
Right. Does that answer your question? Okay. Representative Schumper.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. If you have 4,000 people on a waiting list and you're only adding 200 back each year, you're never going to get caught up, are you?
Mr. Larson.
Mr. Chair, Representative Schumper, we tried to anticipate that question. And I don't have a real good answer. I guess the logic here is we do have another bill, which will be heard here shortly, that also addresses some waiting list issues, so we're hoping that helps out with some of those 4,000 people. This would get us back by the total of 800 slots that I referred to earlier, at least to where we were with waiver slots before then. And it certainly would please the ARC of Minnesota and other advocacy organizations and persons with disabilities if the legislature, in their wisdom, even increased that number.
Representative Norton.
Chair Thiessen, committee members and presenters, I just want to reiterate, I know I spoke to it earlier, but besides parental fees, the need for waivers, at least in my community, is great, and I notice this just takes care of Olmsted County, and thank you for that. But I'm just teasing. Anyway, I just want to make the point. There is a huge waiting list. There is a need, and I know the cost is great, but we need to move in the right direction on this, and I am very supportive of this amendment for the bill.
I have one other question. You mentioned that the caseload was 15,000. Previously announced down, but that was, is that not as a result of cuts, but as because it's more expensive? Can you explain that a little bit?
Mr. Chair, the caseload was at 15,000, maybe even a little above that, about 4 years ago. And due to the way that counties need to manage the waiver program, they basically were moving away from slots and more to a lump sum of money. And so when they've had increased needs of current people on the waiver, when an individual went off, rather than putting someone on, they had to use that money in order to meet those increased needs for someone that we had increasing medical needs or support needs in some manner or whatever. And so that has caused the number to drop of the total number of people on the waiver. And there might be someone from the department that could address that better than I have, but I think that's the gist of it.
Okay, I think that's something we ought to talk about, but maybe not today. But I think there is that raises some other questions I think we need to get at a little bit. So, any other questions, members? All right, seeing none, Representative Laffler renews her motion that House File 705 be recommended to pass and be re-referred to Finance Committee. All in favor of that motion, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. All opposed? The motion is adopted and the bill will proceed on. Madam Chair.
Representative Thiessen.
I would move House File 911 that it would be recommended to pass, and I think this one actually has to move to GovOps because there's a task force established that they probably need to look at. Madam Chair, House File 911, maybe an unfortunate number to choose, but important and good direction for the state to take. It takes advantage of some options provided by Congress in the Deficit Reduction Act,
Okay, yes. To move towards a self-directed supports option approach, which basically would allow someone who is, as I understand it, and Ms. Henry will explain this better than I, but who's on MA to kind of take the money that they get for their PCA services and basically get money instead that they'd otherwise spend on that and decide how they're going to spend it, hire and fire the people, choose the service they want, even choose some assistive technology or changes to their home instead of actually getting hiring a person. And so it kind of gives more independence to the person. And then it also makes some changes to allow people to transition and to stay in their independent housing. I guess that's kind of the basics of it, but I'll let Ms. Henry explain it in more detail. I'd like to move the A2 amendment to get the bill in the form. I'd like it if we could. Do we have that?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So, could we move the A2? Yeah.
Yes. Let's move the A2. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? The amendment is adopted.
Thank you.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair and members of the committee. My name is Ann Henry, and I'm with the Minnesota Disability Law Center. We're part of the Legal Aid Society of Minneapolis, but we represent people with significant long-term disabilities across the state. We are very supportive of this legislation. As Representative Thiessen said, it has two parts. The first part does allow Minnesota to take advantage of a new option that's been made available on the federal level. And this would allow people with personal care assistance services, PCA services, to self-direct their care. They wouldn't actually get cash. They would basically get a budget amount and then have a plan that would have to be approved by the state as to how the money could be used. One of the big advantages here is that right now you just heard the waiting list bill that Representative Lawford has, and the only way that a person can get help through the Medicaid program for, say, a ramp, or maybe you can't get your wheelchair into your bathroom so you need a couple of people to help you bathe, the only way to get that help is get a waiver slot. This option would actually allow people to use the PCA services they're using while waiting for a waiver slot in a flexible way, so that they could then use the money to widen that bathroom doorway and then need less physical assistance to bathe. That's just one example. We also have found, because we do have already in our state some consumer-directed options, and one of the benefits is the fact that people can engage folks who aren't in caregiving for a career. They can get their neighbor to do respite care, or they can get someone they know from church or work to help them out with a couple of meals a week. And that is a tremendous advantage with the staff shortages that we're facing. And I think one more advantage that we don't often think of is that because these are relationships that people help each other because they know each other and are engaged in this way, so far on the consumer directed, we're starting to get some data that show staff turnover costs are going down in these consumer directed programs. Workers' comp costs are going down in these programs. Unemployment costs are going down in these programs because they're really relationship-based. And those are advantages that really I don't think we've really considered. The second big part of the bill involves a shelter-needy payment to allow people to live independently. Right now, folks getting these services, either self-directed PCA, hopefully when this becomes a reality, or home and community waiver don't have enough money to live on. And you heard some folks talk about that on Tuesday. So there's people in line to live in group residential housing, which is a more expensive option than they really would need. They can be more independent, but they need a little more money, $152 a month this would be now, to live independently. And that's really what the bill does. The final part of the bill is some help for people to make a transition. If someone wants to move out of an institution or group residential housing on their own some money to help them get a bed and so on, because all they've got is a personal needs allowance right now. So I'd be happy to try to answer any questions if there are. We do have one family parent who is affected by the bill who has a few short remarks. Actually, I'm going to put my picture of my daughter up.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair and members of the committee. My name is Kathleen Sanders, and I am a single parent to two children. I have a son, Nathaniel, who is 22, and my beautiful daughter, Jennifer, who is 19. I'm here today to ask you to support House File 911. Jenny has been on the waiting list for waivered services her entire life. In 2000, when there was open enrollment for waiver dollars, there was a new program to Anoka County, the Consumer Support Grant, which I had heard about. When we met with her case manager, we decided that the better option for her was the Consumer Support Grant. We made the decision based upon the CSG being an entitlement grant that would stay with her throughout her life. At that time, Jenny was receiving 10 hours per day of PCA services, which resulted in a grant amount of approximately $2,300 per month. With that money, we were able to pay her care providers. We were also able to purchase items relating to her disability and her needs, such as over-the-counter medications, respite care, assistive technology, trainings, both for her and her care providers, behavioral items for school, bus rides, etc. Over her life, this was the best program we have ever had. I loved the program because I hired the workers, I decided what to pay them, and I controlled the services my daughter received. Because of changes in 2003, her grant amount went from $2,300 per month to $900 per month. I could not pay for her care, $900 per month, and so we were forced to go off of the grant. We lost really great care providers for Jenny because we had to switch back over to the straight PCA program. We had to find a provider and then go through the process of trying to find good people to work with Jenny, which was not an easy task. Good PCAs are very hard to find, and if you do find them, they don't stay very long because they're not paid a livable wage. There have been numerous times when I have had to stay home from work to care for Jen because the PCAs would not show up or call, or there were no PCAs to find and hire. When I hired Jenny's staff via the Consumer Support Grant, I did not have this problem. With the CSG, we could use those dollars to purchase other items and services. But with the PCA program, we're limited to only PCA services. This has put a tremendous hardship on my family. Her needs have not changed. Those items and services now need to be covered by my income, which takes away from other household expenses. As an example, she had some major hip surgery last month, and has had to use a wheelchair for 6 weeks, and then will need a walker for 4. All of her added expenses from this surgery have been covered by me. She has needed 24-hour care, but because of her care rating, can only receive a maximum of 14.5 hours of PCA hours. All other hours are covered by me. She will have to have the same surgery on her other hip sometime in the next couple of months and will have the same needs at that time. I'm also very concerned about what is going to happen when she's ready to move out and be on her own. I have asked many different providers, and their response to me has been, is she on a waiver? And when I say no, they have no other information to give me. House File 911 gives families such as ours another alternative to the waiting list for waiver dollars, which may never happen for some of us. The self-directed support option is similar to the CSG. The grant works for families, and it would mean a lot to my family if you would support House File 911. Your support will make a huge difference in my daughter's life. She deserves it, and it's the right thing to do.
Thank you, Ms. Sanders. Are there any questions? Representative Lothar.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and to the witness, thank you for telling your story. In your situation, when you went from $2,300 to the $900, and I know of other families who've gone through terrible transitions that way as well, is the expectation that a different methodology of calculating that need will be used on this so that it would be closer to your real need, or do you anticipate that this would just be federal dollars at that $900 a month level? And perhaps Ms. Henry can answer that.
Madam Chair and Representative Loeffler, yes. Because federal law did not allow the consumer support grant to use the federal part of Medicaid before, we didn't have those federal dollars. Now, because this new option is here, the federal dollars can come in to match our state dollars, so we expect the grants or the self-directed program in this bill to actually be more useful to families.
Madam Chair, if I might just follow up, I have to say, knowing some families who went through those transitions, you know, the continuity of care is just so key. I mean, if you had someone who had to do all those basic care needs for you, you wouldn't want a different person coming in every few days or every few weeks. And I know that we have some wonderful home care agencies that have done a great job of recruiting good people, but it's hard to find good people at low, low wages and physically demanding work. And the cycle of having constant change, never knowing who's going to come into your house, sometimes feeling like your house is vulnerable because despite background checks, sometimes you get the bad apple. It has been a real price and a sacrifice for those families. And the more that we can offer stability and the fact that they can stretch those dollars a little further because they're not paying for as much overhead, those sorts of things, I think this is just a wonderful program. Thank you.
Okay. Any other questions? Representative Johnson.
Madam Chair, the witness on this end here. No, this has got to be a cost saver, doesn't it? Save some money?
Pardon?
I wanted to ask the other witness here.
Madam Chair, yes, this should actually save money because, well, first of all, the way that it's structured, the service part of it shouldn't cost more money because people will get a budget of either what they used last year or an average amount for their medical condition. The way the state now does PCA ratings. And then the second part is to allow people to live more independently rather than in group settings. And so, yes, the hope is here that we will be able to reduce the long range in terms of the options for people.
Mm-hmm.
Any other questions or comments? Representative Liebling.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and I also really think this is a very appealing idea, and so this isn't a critical question at all, but I'm just curious, is there any expectation that there would be an increase in sort of the bureaucracy attached as there would need to be some oversight of how the dollars are spent and all of that?
Madam Chair and Representative Liebling, well, we hope not. The structure of the bill now is based on federal law in hopes that as our state tries to get approval for this program, we will have met what we need to. But there's a lot of details that have to be worked out, and that's why we need this advisory task force, because there are going to have to be protocols and formats for people. But hopefully it can be as simple as possible so that folks can really use it. And I think that's from the advocacy community and from families, that's our message. It has to be simple because families such as Ms. Saunders already are doing so much. They don't have time for a lot of extra paperwork and bureaucracy. So I do appreciate that question, and we will work hard to see that it isn't a lot of administrative bureaucracy for families.
Well, thank you, Ms. Saunders, and I think it's time for Representative Friesen to finish up with the bill. We're over a little bit of time.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and I'd renew my motion that House File 911 be recommended to pass and be referred to government operations.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed?
Thank you.
Meeting's adjourned.